listening to the podcast of Always Forward, the church planting initiative of the Anglican Church in North America, helping plant gospel-centered, sacramental, missional churches. For more information and resources, please visit always-forward.com.
How's it going, church planters? This is Sean McCain with another episode of Always Forward. I'm here with my buddy, as always, my partner in crime, Dan Alger. Dan, how you doing today?
I'm good, man. It's a good day.
It is a good day. Well, hey, guys, we have a different kind of episode for you today. We wanted to go over the top five mistakes church planters make. And Dan and I have come up with five items that we probably, I mean, I personally, it was really quick for me to figure out at least five mistakes that I've made. This could be a 5-hour episode, but I limited it to five. So is Dan. We haven't even talked about it yet, and we're going to share. We're going to go back and forth talking about our five mistakes.
So you have your list of five, and I have my list of five, and we have not disclosed to the other one those five, and we're going to see where they overlap and how that works. Right?
Who knows what's going to happen? Well, before we kick that off, we're going to catch you guys up on some announcements. Dan, you teased us last time with some details about the next Always Forward conference.
Yeah. What's up? Cause we had such an amazing Always Forward conference in August of this year, 2016. And so we're looking at, okay, what's it going to look like for 2017? And we've been in conversation with the rest of the provincial leadership and such as well. And what we're doing, and I'm excited about this, Sean, we're doing something a little different, but we're bringing the Always Forward conference into provincial assembly. Okay. So provincial assembly is the gathering of all of the ACNA, the Anglican Church in North America, happens every 3 years or so, although the pattern is thrown off when we have to elect a new archbishop. But it's every 3 years or so. And this is the gathering to celebrate all of the ministries that are going on in our province, to build relationships, to gather together as the ACNA family. And this year it is June 28th through 30th in Wheaton, Illinois, June 28th through 30th in Wheaton, Illinois, on the campus of Wheaton. And so it's really affordable because we get to stay on campus and the food is on campus. And so the way that they've organized provincial assembly this year is to ask ministries within the ACNA, like the Always Forward Church Planting Initiative that we helped to bring some leadership to lead sub-conferences or mini-conferences within provincial assembly. And so that's what we're doing. And so we're going to have speakers on our own for our own track and be able to deal with topics in very detailed ways regarding church planting and to be able to have a lot of the relationship building stuff that we did earlier this year just amongst church planters. We're going to be able to have our space to do that, but we also get to do that as part of the greater ACNA gathering. And so we get the benefit of the great speakers and content and such that is happening on the main stage of provincial assembly as well. And so this is really a great opportunity for us to also not just be sort of a siloed fringe of the larger body of the church, but because what we want to see happen within Always Forward is that church planting is normalized, that it becomes the norm rather than the exception. And so this is a great way for us to bring the church planting awareness and work of ministry into the center stage here in the ACNA as well. And so we're really excited about it. You can get more information at anglicanchurch.net, anglicanchurch.net. And this is so new, so fresh that we don't even have it on our website, the always-forward.com yet, but we will in the next couple of weeks because it's brand new. And so more information on speakers and how this is going to be organized and all of those things are coming very soon, but wanted to get that information out to you so you can go ahead and block your calendars off June 28th through 30th. It's going to be an awesome time.
That's going to be great. I'm actually pretty pumped about that, especially to plop down our church planting community in the midst of the provincial assembly. That's going to be a lot of fun for them to see us, for us to see them, to learn from them. I mean, really there's no us in them. And that's kind of what I love about it. And that's what makes us so beautifully Anglican is this connection with the larger whole. I know a lot of church planters are out there like me who have become Anglican partly to be connected with the whole in this way. So this is going to be a great way to visualize that and see that.
And we get to keep our ethos too. Like there's various ethoses. Is that the plural form of ethos? ethoses.
Sure.
And so we get because a provincial assembly is not just a stuffy business meeting and stuff. There's delegate meetings and business stuff that has to go on. But if you're not an official delegate, you don't have to go into a lot of that businessy kind of stuff. Although you can if you want to, some of it. But we get to keep our ethos, and we're going to do some stuff to make sure we put the always forward feel on things as well. Like, we're looking at doing kind of a dinner fellowship gathering with some good frosty beverages somewhere off campus, Wheaton College admins off campus somewhere where we might gather together for things like that. So it's really going to be a good time. Like I said, more info coming, but really do want you to look at super affordable as well. Look at June 28th through 30th, joining us in Wheaton, Illinois.
Sweet. Awesome. More information coming to you guys about that. Well, let's hit this. Let's do it. We got five mistakes that we had, the top five mistakes church planners have made, even the mistakes that we have made personally. These kind of came to me a little bit too quickly. It worried me a little bit how quick my top five mistakes came.
Like, but, do you mean the top five in the last week?
Yeah, exactly. I make so many mistakes. It's ridiculous. So, you know, do you ever have that moment where you kind of realize, like, who let me do this? You know, how did I? Yeah. So I've got lots of mistakes. So let me start with can I start with my number one, or you know what, Dan, you go first.
You want me to go first?
You start with number five.
That's so great.
Go ahead.
So start with number five, yeah. Work our way up. We'll just alternate. I'll do one, then you do one, and I'll do one.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So my number five, and again, look, when I put this list together, they're not necessarily in order of significance or frequency, but they're just five church planting mistakes that either I've made personally or I've seen others make.
I've made every mistake that we're going to talk about. So okay.
So number five for me is planting a church without going through any kind of assessment or training. That's my number five. Okay.
Let me tell you why.
That's it. Okay.
What's wrong with that? Why do you need assessment and training, Dan?
So why I think this is important. This is kind of a hot button issue for me because there's so much misunderstanding about what church planting assessment is. Church planting assessment is not meant to tell you whether you can or cannot plant a church. That's not what it means. God can use who God wants to use, and it would be pretty presumptuous of us to say you don't measure up. You can't plant. That's not what this is about. I think it's called assessment in the greater church planting world. Perhaps discernment is a better way to phrase that, where what we're really trying to do is say, okay, you haven't planted a church before, and so you might not be aware of exactly the demands of this particular ministry. And so what gifting does it take? What experiences does it take? What is going to be asked of you? An assessment helps look into your life and your giftedness, your particular giftedness, and your experiences in ministry and life to be able to compare that to the demands of the work of church planting, and then be able to say, here's places where you might not know that you're naturally gifted and talented, and here's how you can help leverage that for church planting, or here's places where there might be some more reading or education or conversation you need to have, or here's a place where you might need to be intentional about forming a team in this area because this isn't where you are necessarily really great at bringing some leadership and direction to. It's supposed to be supportive. It's supposed to be life-giving, not although straightforward and honest, but it's not supposed to be tearing down in any way. It's assessment really is a gift. And I think people that go into church planting without going through the work of assessment do so unprepared and sometimes a little prideful as they step into it as well, thinking that perhaps they know more than they do. And without that support community that had been built around them through the assessment process. So that's, I think assessment is hugely important.
I totally agree with that. And in my own experience, it's a gift. Like, and at the end of the day, if you take an assessment and you and the community assessing and discerning with you realize you should not be planting a church, then praise the Lord. Like, save yourself, you know, and your family. Fantastic. That's not most people, but even in the worst case scenario, it's still sparing you like some really hard times ahead. So I totally agree with that.
And I'll say this too. I think one of the people who, one of the groups of people who value most from assessment is not the planter themselves. Well, the planter themselves, and also, and most particularly, the planter spouse. Because I think that a lot of times the planter spouse is not necessarily in all of the eat, sleep, and breathe church plant conversations that are being had around the planter, and therefore feel a little sidelined and maybe have a lot of questions. And the potential church planters is probably an entrepreneurial kind of person, aggressive, visionary, dreamer, self-starter. That's probably who they are, and might be leaving their spouse kind of in the dust on this, and bringing them in for assessment together allows space to say, well, how are you feeling about this? What do you think? What are your concerns? What do you feel like you bring to the table, or are worried is going to be asked of you that you don't feel like you can bring to the table, and make sure that the relationships are built around that church planter spouse as well, so that they feel supported and really truly a part of things in all of this. I just find that the spouses in particular, when they leave our church planter assessment weekends, we've gotten so many cards and notes and emails and stuff that just said, I really feel like I'm a part of this now and feel much more secure as we're stepping into it. And so don't neglect the church planter spouses in the process either.
Yeah, save your marriage, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a you great, got it. Okay. Well, so all my right. number five, that was a good
number
one.
Number five.
It's going to be hard to follow, but I think I've got something that's kind of similar, actually.
Okay, all right.
My number five is pretending that you have the answers. Hmm. This is personal. I love looking like I know what I'm doing. But, you know, and I think it's just kind of the way God's got his hand on my neck here is just putting me in situations where I'm constantly exposed as like, he really doesn't know what he's doing, does he? And being humbled by it.
So what does it look like to pretend? What does it look like to pretend you know the answers?
Yeah. I mean, so when you're sitting, let's say you're sitting down with someone who you're telling the church, telling the vision of the church plant, or maybe you're going through assessment, or there's so many times you're going to be sitting down kind of an interview format. People want to get to know you, want to get to know your vision, and they ask you a question that you have no idea how to answer. And the temptation is to start, you know, improvising or filling in we can pull that off, but in that
there's other words for that we're not allowed to say the airwaves, I think, as well.
Oh, and that too. Yes. but I would say, man, it's over the years of me being a part of church plants, I've learned to not give in to that temptation and to just really admit, cut myself some slack, cut them some slack, and you actually begin to create a culture of humility and saying, you know, I just don't know. It's a it's a culture of humility, but also a partnership. And when you do that, even in launch team huddles, when you say things like, that is a great question, I have no idea. What it does is, besides not help your ego a lot, which who cares, that's fine, you'll get over it. What it does is create space for your leaders to see where they can contribute, where their gifts might have a role and a place on that team. And also that this isn't actually kind of a cult of personality. We're going to get behind this one leader who's got it all figured out. But this is a team effort. This is a community coming around a vision that God has brought about, not that alone this person has brought about. But it brings about this kind of co-working partnership mentality that people can get behind. So it's tempting to pretend you have the answers. But at the end, it's actually not really good for you either, because then you go to bed at night wondering, okay, when are they going to find out that I have no idea what I'm doing? As opposed to just being upfront. And even in the liturgy on Sundays, man, there's been so many times where I've messed up, I've done something wrong. And to just cut the tension and say, oh, guys, sorry, that's on me. Can we do that again? You'll get a few chuckles. But what's really beautiful about it is you can rehumanize in those moments. You can humanize your worship life as a church, the vision that God has given to you all. And you kind of also set an example for your other leaders that, hey, if they make mistakes and they don't know what they're doing, they can say that and ask for help. So it's a really life-giving culture if we can fight that temptation to pretend we have all the answers.
Yeah, it's a culture of grace and dependence, right? I mean, it's a culture, and that's at the heart of what we believe in the gospel, right? And that we need grace. We as the leaders need a copious amount of grace, and that we're fully dependent upon the power and work and leading of the Holy Spirit. And so if we start pretending like we have all the answers, then we start manipulating the lead to keep that in place, that illusion right, in place, and that's no good. That's no good.
And risk is so close to what, I mean, it's so close to this topic. And as leaders, we've got to cultivate a culture of risk taking. You can't really plan a church without taking some big risks. Agreed. So yeah, I think that's all kind of one big challenge for church planners, but that's my number five.
Good.
What do you got?
Good. I like that number five. Okay. Number four for me is premature launch. And so
that's my number three.
That's your number three.
So I got one of those two.
Good. All right. We both have premature launches. All right. So what I mean by premature launch is, and this is perhaps one of the most frequent prevalent mistakes that I see in the work of church planting across our province. And so premature launch is starting your service, your worship service, your public worship service before you have the proper amount of people resources, really before you're ready. Part of that is just number of people. And we're not over concentrating on numbers here. I'm not bashing small churches by any means. I'm the church planter at a small church right now. I am not bashing small churches. I think they're great, and I think discipleship can happen and service can happen. And we're not hyper focused on numbers. That's not what we're saying. But what we are saying is, when you move to a place of public worship, there's a demand upon your church community, just volunteers wise, of you need greeters, you need childcare people, you need musicians, you need readers, you need there's all kind of maybe cleaners, maybe set up and tear down depending on what your situation is. And if you don't have enough people to be able to handle all of that, you might be able to start a worship service, but it's hard to sustain it because you cannot overestimate how much it will drain your people having to come early, stay late, mm-hmm. do the work during the service. And if you can't have a rotation of people, it's going to really hurt their morale and just their physical energy and willingness to be a part of things. And on top of that, there's just a critical mass that's needed for worship itself, because you have to think not only how many people do you have, but how many people will you have actually engaged as participants in the worship service as well. If you've got 30 people in your church and five of them are helping with childcare and another five of them are helping to lead music, and then there's you up front, and then there's people greeting at the back. The people who are actually sitting in the chairs, you're down in the low 20s or in the teens. And so it's just hard for new people coming in to connect in that environment. So there's that side of it too, just the congregational voice and singing and in liturgy, a critical mass makes a real big difference in that. So I think premature launch is a huge mistake. And here's the last thing I'll say about it. Here's what happens all the time. The reason that this is so frequent is because we start meeting in our houses for launch team training or core group training or whatever. And that group starts to grow a little bit, and then maybe it plateaus some, and it's going slower, and you've been doing it for a while, and there's a lot of pressure. People will start saying to you, I know a lot of people who will come if we just start Sunday morning. They're not willing to come to your house or my house, but they'd come on a Sunday morning. I just know that those people are out there. And when are we going to do this? I'm just ready to start moving. And so there's a lot of pressure even from our people to move into that place of Sunday worship. And so we give into it too quickly and step into it, oftentimes at the detriment of the church planting process.
Totally. And I'm all one to advocate. Let's plant churches from a life of worship, from the sacraments. I mean, those are the things as Anglicans we look to and say, this is what brings about the church is Holy Eucharist. So how do you do that though, if you don't have a critical mass to meet on Sunday? Well, I'd say you should be praying and worshiping in your launch team huddles and even celebrating Eucharist then. And I think you still don't need the burden of actually having like a large building and rent and all of that stuff is such a big undertaking, and you need to do it when it's kind of age appropriate for the church, I would suggest. Like you're not going to give the car keys to the baby to go get milk at the grocery store, right? Mm-hmm. They need a license. They need to be 16 at least.
Well, what and about like then, the power yeah, wheels? Power wheels
that
can
might
they
work too? But yeah, but I digress. But what I mean here is, you know, in our launch team meetings, we can still have that vibrant worship life, that sacramental worship life of the church. In our homes, in smaller gatherings. And what that also communicates is it also kind of does this like pre-launch expectation on your people that, hey, we don't have to have it all together right now. You don't have to have it together. I don't have to have it together. We're going to worship. We're going to pray. And we're going to ask God to bring about his church, because this whole thing isn't on our shoulders. It's actually something he does, and we get to participate. So there's also an opportunity there in resisting that temptation to launch too soon, to actually do this in an order that's really godly and place God at the forefront of the charge, and not either pretend you have the answers or even hope in some, you know, unrealistic way that there's all these people out there. If you build it, they'll come. Yeah. As opposed to, let's not rely on any of those suspicions. Let's actually rely on the reality of the gospel and so it good. Being announced and forming us as a people, and being patient enough to allow God to invite us into the launch season when it's ready. I think that's really where it's at. So that's a great one, Dan. And that was my number three too. So good. Two birds, one stone.
Good. All right. Well, so what's your number four?
Number four, I don't know exactly how to say this, but I've noticed an over obsession with contextualization in church planters. And it sounds something like, and I think this is a mistake. There's an opposite mistake too. Like a lack of concern for context,
which is my number three, a lack of concern for context.
You're just copying me now. No, that's all right.
No, I guess I'm just being contrary, right? No, it's
actually, this is pretty funny because, the way you've described us before is Oshan's the Neshota guy and Dan's the Trinity guy. Sean's on the Catholic end and I'm on the evangelical end, or I don't know how you describe it. But anyways, that's not totally true, actually, but we are going to play into the cliche a little bit right now. being obsessed with context. What I mean by that as a mistake is being so concerned with the way that the neighborhood does things that we lose the integrity of what it means to be the church or to be a Christian. And we even lose, you start to kind of like mold the gospel message in ways that are a little bit more palatable, and thereby you lose some of the things that need not be palatable for people, the things that are confrontation in the reality of the gospel taking flesh in the church, in a place, in a neighborhood. There's some things that are just really weird and different and confrontational. They pick fights with a context, and that's okay. I would warn, though, I'm not arguing for instance, a strange, either, you know, high church Catholic or even really strange, honestly, 1980s evangelical seeker service. I'm saying they're actually taking on the same error, both of them. Like they're both really strange. Maybe one knows that they are and the other doesn't. But anyways, what I'm not saying is go into your corners and do strange things, because that's the gospel.
Don't be weird for the sake of being weird.
Yeah, leave being weird to Austin. We've got that on lock. It's weird enough. But I would say those things that are in our identity as Christians, as maybe as Anglicans, that may seem strange, those are fine. And you shouldn't worry about trying to acclimate people to, like I've seen, for instance, people say, well, let's start super low church and then we'll slowly make our way into those things that we really want to be. And that's the same bait and switch that seeker-sensitive folks get caught into too. You can be yourself, you can be strange, but I would say and warn, understand why it is that you're strange. Is it bells for the sake of bells? Is it incense for the sake of incense? And just because we want to be as traditional and as high church as possible? Or is there something about those things that is pastoral and just honestly, objectively gospel embodying?
Yeah,
that is just so valuable for a church and a neighborhood to experience and be exposed to. And I think if we lose sight of the truth that is that the liturgy is pregnant with the truth of the gospel, if we lose sight of that and we fail to teach our folks the things that may seem strange, we lose that connection. We lose that pastoral impulse in our neighborhood. And we just become this strange thing on a shelf that everyone thinks is irrelevant and forgets about eventually.
Yeah.
So does that make sense? Like kind of leaning in a little too hard to the neighborhood?
Well, I don't think that we're actually saying opposite things with my number three of not learning the community enough. I think that they're equal and opposite errors. So I'm more on the evangelical side, perhaps, but I wear a chasuble
It's funny to me because I grew up evangelical, you grew up Anglican, and here we are. Ships passing in the night.
Anyway, all right. So
you said you wear a chasuble. Is that right?
I wear a chasuble during Advent and Lent and Easter.
Good for you, man.
Yeah. So I mean, we don't swing the incense and things, but I love it. I love visiting that, and I love being part. But that's
there's still time for you to grow.
That's not where I sit. Sure. So I think our two mistakes here that we're saying. I mean, you're saying on one hand, don't learn your community so that you can match your community, mm-hmm. But instead have integrity in who you are as the church. And what I'm saying is I see the mistake of people not learning their community enough at all. And so they don't know how to make what they're doing as the church accessible to that community, you know, right. that they almost come in with an arrogance of, well, we're going to do whatever it is that we're going to do. And if you, I mean, they wouldn't say it like this, but if you dig down deep enough, this is what it is. We're going to do what we're going to do. And if you're smart enough, you're going to come and be a part of it rather than having an inviting say, okay, we're going to be weird in sections of who we are. And we know our community well enough to know that you're going to think that's weird. And so we want to make it accessible to you. We want to say, because we know that you think that's weird, we want to tell you, why do we do that? And how can you be a part of it? And if you're uncomfortable with it, well, let me answer some of your questions about it. But if you don't even know your community, you're not going to understand where it is that you're weird for them. And you can't have those kind of conversations. So I think we're saying that we're actually saying the same thing. Laying out two different errors because the other side for me, and we're bleeding your four and my three together here in not learning the community is things like, I mean, who they are, where they work, where they play, what their presumptions are, what the history of that community is, geography, I guess I would say, of the area as well of, is there a highway that runs through your town or a river that runs through your town that people on one side of the river or highway don't necessarily go to the other side because their rhythm of their life is different? You need to be aware of that, of the neighborhood that you're in. And if you are reaching one neighborhood and then decide to move to a different physical location across the river, you might not pull from the same demographic of folks and your language might have to change. And so you just have to be aware of that. So I think there's, maybe we could just put these things together and say improper contextualization would either be over contextualization, which is what you're warning against, or under contextualization, which is what I'm warning against. We want to be in that sweet spot that holds our integrity and speaks to where they are.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, I appreciate that. That's good stuff. And that's coming from, honestly, a little bit of pushback of people going, you're going to plant a Smells and Bells Anglican church in South Austin? Are you serious? Right. And lo and behold, you know, we did. God did.
Look, it worked.
but in order for it to really be like a ministry, a gospel ministry that makes disciples in the life of a church, there has to be that proficiency with the culture enough so much so that I can actually bridge the gap and explain why it is that we do what we do. It's mm-hmm. really catechesis, right? Mm-hmm. And in order to catechize people, you have to know their language. You have to know what they love. You have to know who they are to take them somewhere else. So I think that's right on. And I appreciate that.
Well, all right. So we've covered 5-4 and then we've covered both of our threes then, right?
So you've only got two left, right?
I've only got two left.
I've got two left as well.
Okay. All right. So is it my turn then to do two?
Sure.
Okay.
Do one. Yeah. Go ahead.
All right. Okay. So I'll do my number two, is laying on hands too quickly. And so what I mean by that is, maybe you're not actually laying on hands, but putting people in leadership and building structures too soon.
Come on, man.
So yeah,
that's I got that one.
It happens.
My number one is giving out leadership too quick.
Oh really? So that's your number one. Nice.
You're the same person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or maybe there's
just Mexican.
You're Mexican Irish.
That's complicated.
I'm Mexican. Oh, God. I don't know. I'm just a mutt. I don't know what I am. So the idea here is, this is one of the toughest things. This is one of the finesse aspects of church planting where you want to be building up leaders and raising up leaders. You have to for this work to sustain and grow and be healthy. But if you give away influence before you really get to know the people and not only get to know them, because they might be great, they might have great character, they might be highly skilled, but maybe they're not on board with the direction that you think the church needs to go, and they might not even know that yet. So if you put people in positions of influence that are going to start influencing in ways contrary to where you as the church planter need things to go, and that I don't mean don't take counsel, and it's good to have people who disagree with you. I mean, don't, you know, let's not take this too far, but you can cause a lot of problems by giving people influence too early without spending a lot of time getting to know them and making sure they understand you and the direction that you're leading the church. And that includes if people have been Anglican or liturgical in the past, they're going to want to put a vestry together extremely quickly. Do not put a vestry together. And if you're a diocesan official listening to this, you need to make sure that your canons of your diocese don't force church plants to immediately form a vestry. That is not what you need in the early days of a church plant. You do not need that kind of polity system. And for many of our churches, well, all of them, that when we're starting a church plant, we're technically a mission church. And so you as the church planter are the vicar and the bishop is the rector of that church. And there's no need for a vestry in the middle of that. And so what I encourage people to do is put together, we call ours a shepherd team, because that's a new language that you can kind of define how you want to. Some people call it a council of advice, that they're people that you've asked to serve in a place of counsel, but don't have authority to say you will do this or you won't do that. You have to have accountability in the finances. And so someone else needs to be taking care of that. And I don't mean making decisions over that. I mean doing the bookkeeping and signing checks. But you cannot give away that authority for where the money's going to be spent or how decisions are going to be made for quite some time. Depending on how fast your church grows and such like that. But really for the first couple of years, I think there has to be much more people acting in a role of counsel rather than a role of authority.
Yep, I'd agree with that. And one way to work with that, one way we've done it is we've have like a financial advisory team, like you've said, instead of a vestry. And one of the things we've stated really clearly is we're learning how to be a vestry. We don't know how to do it. And in fact, even if you've been on a vestry before, you've not been on one at this church. And
that's right.
We have a different culture. Another way we've done it with our launch team is to not say this is a leadership huddle or a leadership team or a leadership fill in the blank. But this is a launch team huddle so that when folks are given responsibility, because you will need to hand out responsibility, go and help do this, go tackle that, come back, report back. And it can become, I think it's just kind of like gravity, it just begins to happen. People begin to assume that they're a leader responsible for and full of authority to accomplish anything related to, you know, Sunday mornings or something. I don't know.
Yep.
Or the finances. But to continue to call them back to being a part of a team in like a launch team huddle, mm-hmm. and not a leadership huddle or a leadership team, mm-hmm. You kind of help avoid that accidental leadership language. Does that make sense? And
That's right.
It doesn't have to be accidental either. You can be really clear. Hey, we're getting mm-hmm. to know each other and we're going to take this slow and I need your help. But we're a team and I'm not going to like issue out titles and leadership roles and stuff like that yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. I mean, because I think people lead off of assumptions that they have of where things need to go and how they need to get there. And you can't give away authority and influence to people until you're certain that their assumptions line up with your assumptions.
Right.
Another way to say it, if you don't like the word assumptions, is expectations, right?
You're taking my number two now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I won't move. I won't say expectations until just a minute. Then, all right. So I think there is a fine line, and sometimes people will come, especially people who want power and authority, will find their way into church plants because they think that they can get it there, and make a church tend to what they want it to be, and church planters oftentimes hear somebody say to them, so what you're saying is you appoint the leadership team. And so you're kind of just a dictator basically is what you can do. And they say, well, if you want to call it that, I mean, yes, I'm a benevolent dictator for a small period of time who's trying to build a government where I become less and less. But at the beginnings, it would be anarchy if we just gave all of that away. And so there is a sense where, yeah, I hold a lot of that authority at the beginning, and I'm under authority of my bishop, and I have a coach, and I'm under the authority of my canon for church planting, if you have one that's connected, or your dean or whoever. So people know what's going on. You're not just an isolated, autonomous local congregation and you are a rebel church planter. There's greater amounts of submission and authority and accountability than just that local leadership group. And so you have to make sure that all of that other authority is in place. And then you slowly lead people in. I mean, you wouldn't, if somebody in your church just met somebody and got engaged and decided to get married within 2 weeks, you would go, slow down.
Take me on a date first, odd.
Okay. All right. So you're engaged. Now I encourage you to have a really long engagement, right? And the reason that you, with your wisdom, would say that is because they probably haven't talked about a lot of the assumptions that they need to talk about or their expectations of things. So anyway.
And those folks, Dan, who would push back on like clear leadership early on, you need to invite them off that team.
Yep.
I mean, just save yourself some time and energy and emotional, reserve.
Yep.
Thanks for being here. We'll let you know when we start services. I don't know. Like, help yourself out. Invite them off the team.
That's right.
Graciously and lovingly. Because it may have nothing to do with you and something to do with something else, but still.
Yeah. No, that's so good. Yeah. And so letting people leave when you need them to leave, I think, is a good part of it, too. Maybe that should be a number 6 or something, is letting people leave.
Well, okay, so my last one then is related, since you talked about it, not communicating expectations well. I think with your team, with even your own family and yourself, expectations can really be a harsh thing if they're not communicated and laid out pretty clear. One way that I run into this all the time is on Sunday morning, this is just a fresh example. On Sunday morning, something's not happening and it should be happening. And I get frustrated. I'm like, why is this not happening? And then I've got into the habit now of asking myself, have I actually communicated that I want this thing to happen? And to who? And how?
Yeah.
And I realize, like, most of the time I realize, like, no, I haven't said anything. It's been in my head. And so instead of being frustrated at these sweet volunteers who are there out of joy, and I catch myself before I talk to them, praise God, and ask, like, Sean, have you actually done your job here in communicating an expectation that this is like you'd like this to be done? And I realize, like, no, I haven't. Oh, man. And so we get to have a different conversation is, hey, you know, I'm sorry. I have never communicated this to you, but I would really love this to happen. Can you help me with this? And they go, oh, yeah, totally. Right. For sure. So many times I've found myself in a situation where I have had this, like, pent-up frustration about something.
Yeah.
When it's totally needless because people just don't know what you want. And sometimes you need to communicate that. Or the flip side, people have huge expectations or just different expectations, and they're disappointed, they're frustrated. And what they really need is someone to say, here's what we're going to do. Here's the expectation. It's not super high. Mm-hmm. For instance, in our pre-launch season of a church, hey, we don't have to have it all together. And if we have sound problems, that's okay. Because we're pre-launch right now. It actually became kind of a motto for us. Like,
yeah,
when something would fall apart, I remember the person helping set the table, like, totally spilled the wine over the altar. It was just like, you know, and to say, hey guys, pre-launch, it's cool. It was like, oh, okay, cool. We're all learning how to do this. So that kind of thing, I think, cuts you some slack and cuts other people some slack.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good thing. Keep an eye on that.
Yeah, you know, my close friend, church planter as well, and our colleague, Alan Hawkins, he always says, unmet expectations equals pain. Mm. And there's truth in that. I mean, if somebody's expectations aren't met, then they think you've, you have failed them somehow, but your expectations might have been completely different and you weren't even headed to the same place that they were. But now they are disappointed. And so managing church plant, I mean, managing expectations in a church plant is so vitally important of just, okay. And I think part of this is saying, let's fast forward to 10 years from now and things go as we have hoped and dreamed. What do we look like 10 years from now? Mm-hmm. And when you ask that question, I mean, I've even gone to the point of this is why launch team training is so important and why leadership development with your key leaders and discipleship with them on these things are so important is to line up these expectations. I've gone through the exercise with them multiple times of we're going to sit together. We're going to divide you up into groups. You're going to have a big piece of paper and some markers and you're going to draw the church 10 years from now. And show that to the, we're going to then share what you've drawn and then to do that again 6 months later and do it again 6 months later. And what you'll see happen is as you do that exercise multiple times, the drawings will start to become more similar. Like at first somebody's going, we've built this really great building over here. Cause that's one of the huge expectations, right? Is that all this stuff that we're doing right now in the house and stuff,
yeah,
we just have to go through that in order to get a building, right? Cause that's an expectation. And so when you say something to them, like, you know, I'm kind of building agnostic. Like if we get one, then that's great. If we have to operate this way, that's going to be okay. Cause that's not our focus. Then their expectation is going, I thought this was all about. But if you start teaching that it's not about the building, less of those pictures are going to start having a church structure in it. Yes. So I just think that's a good exercise and a good physical way to be able to see, are the expectations really lining up in this?
Yeah, that's good. Well, what was your last one, Dan? Did you have another one?
Okay. Yeah. So my last one is planting a worship service, not a church.
Ooh. Come on now.
Planning a worship service and not a church. Our corporate worship services are a huge aspect of who we are, and especially as Anglicans, it's our worship services are our chief form of discipleship and catechism and outreach and fellowship and communion. They're chiefly important. But just a Sunday worship service that is well attended and has good average Sunday attendance and has good collection each Sunday, that is not the end game of church planting. That's not the end game. And so it's not just about high ASA and financial stability that comes out of a good worship service that we can report good numbers to the diocese, because there are a lot of larger churches that are completely ineffective at doing the work of the gospel, of doing the work that the church is actually supposed to do. And so sometimes we move quickly into the most visible side of things, which is this worship service. And we already talked about doing that prematurely without casting the vision for the greater things of the gospel lived out incarnated in the church. What does community really look like rather than just showing up in the same place on a Sunday? What does service outside of our walls really look like? What does discipleship look like? What does church discipline look like? Right. What does it mean to have authority and to be under authority and to serve well and to what is the church? And I think when you ask that question, what is the church? And of course, the theological term would be ecclesiology. What is the church? That's the primary place where you start in managing expectations as well, as defining that for folks of what that is. And your answer cannot be, I want a safe place to go on Sundays. That is a very shallow, partial answer to what is church and therefore what are we planting?
Totally. And Dan, you know, I think even if you're planting a service, you end up leading people in such a way to accomplish a service, as opposed to planting a church that takes on the idea of making disciples.
Yep.
Instead of treating people like assets or resources to accomplish a worship service, you end up doing things like building friendships and tending to people's like Christian maturity. You end up making disciples. You end up seeing people as people and not as just kind of resources. And I think that's really, really critical. So much in our like on the wayness of planting, There's been so much that God has formed in my life. And I know that there's been so much that God has formed in other people's lives. And we risk missing seeing that and being present enough to minister to it when the only goal here is to like accomplish a service,
yeah,
as opposed to being present for people and actually, I mean, your pastoral ministry begins the day you begin fundraising and talking to people about this church in your mm-hmm. living room at a church plant launch team huddle. Those moments, they will bring up things that have nothing to do seemingly with the church service that you guys are envisioning.
That's right.
And we've got to pay attention to that.
That's right. I mean, you have to understand that most of the people who come, they've never really thought about how churches get started before. They've never really been a part of a church plant before. They don't know how it works. And especially if you're working with folks who are not really mature believers or are new Christians, or very cultural Christians, their understanding of what church is really is a building and a service. We have to help them understand the greater vision of what the church is supposed to be. And part of that is pastorally leading them away from simply a building and a service. We need to raise their expectations as to what this is about and put some expectations to sleep as well, because our end game is a God-honoring, worshiping, disciple-making, multiplying, deep community, loving, serving church. That's our end game. And part of that is expressed very deeply in our worship. But worship is an expression of who we are. And so what we need to plant is who we are and let our worship come out of that rather than start a service and that be as far as we really hope to go.
Man, that's right. That's good, Dan. Well, there's our top five, top 10, our, I don't know, seven.
I don't know, seven, eight, repeats. Nine, some. Yeah.
If you all have any other top mistakes that you have made, you should get a hold of us, email those to us, put it on Facebook or tweet it or something.
Mm-hmm.
Let's celebrate our mistakes and learn from them. And I hope that this helps kind of start a conversation with us as church planners in community that we don't have to actually not make mistakes and that there's grace for us. Well, I hope this conversation has been helpful for you guys. It's been really fun for Dan and I as we get to share some of the top mistakes we've made.
Can I just say that when we went through this list and I'm checking, have I done these things? I have done all of these things.
Yeah, me too, man.
Multiple times.
Hey, we're curious too what you, seriously, like you think you learned it the first time around. Nope. If you guys have any other mistakes, we would love to, as we post this on Facebook, write in the comments or email us or tweet some of the other mistakes you've made. It'd be great to learn from you all as well. We hope this time has been good for you. Did you know that this is the last podcast episode of 2016?
Yeah.
And we are going to be back in full force in 2017, Dan and I, to keep this going. So during this time, we hope that you all have, I know it's busy as pastors in the season, but we hope that you have a restful Christmas season, in Advent as we prepare, but also in Christmas when we celebrate the incarnation and into Epiphany. Man, we got a great season ahead. During that time, if you guys think of it, would you send us some ideas of what you would like to see happening for the future of this podcast as we turn the year and plan ahead? We would love to hear from you. We have some really good ideas and episodes coming up, but we'd love to hear from you as well.
Yeah, and let me close by saying this. Truly, for all of you who are church planters or supporters of church planters and or church leaders out there, our heart within Always Forward and Sean and I with this podcast, we don't simply care about the concept of church planting. We truly love and care about you. We pray often for those who are out there planting churches and who are discerning and who are thinking about it. And so our hope in all of this is not just to do a study of church planting in some kind of clinical separated way, but that our desire within Always Forward and the Always Forward team is to love you and to serve you and care for you and to bless you in any way that we can. So let us contact us. Let us know how we can care for you. And if nothing else, even if we don't ever talk face to face, know that we are praying for you and that that we do, that we do love you deeply. And so in this season of Advent, a season of great expectation, we have great expectation for what the Lord is doing in you and through you and what he's doing in the Anglican Church in North America and through our church planting initiative of Always Forward as well. So bless you this Christmas, and we will be back again in 2017 with more church planting content.
Thanks for listening to the Always Forward podcast. Visit us at www.always-forward.com for more resources, to submit your questions, or to interact with us. See you next time.